Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Chelly.
February 16, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. And this is the show you were looking for. How do I know that? Because you're hearing me say this. Anyway, it is Wednesday, the middle of the week. And I did take the first 2 days of the week off this time. And that is strange, I know. But two different reasons. One, I had a nasty, nasty migraine headache on Monday and was going to do a really poor job if I went live. And on Tuesday, I was working on something. And I'll get to it later on in the show because I want to get to my first hour guest as quickly as possible. Linda West, author of, there's a lot of books she's the author of. But, I mean, they're all in a very interesting sort of genre that I don't often go into on this show. But feedback from you guys last time, because she talked about channeling and this experience regarding going into, let's call it an altered state, and this whole thing about this big crystal and all that stuff. And I know you guys will remember that if you're regular listeners, because that seemed to strike a weird chord, like, whoa, we never heard you go into this sort of, territory before. And I'm really happy to do so, and Linda West is probably the best person we could conjure to do this with. She is a really popular author when it comes to this sort of subject matter, and I hate even classifying it because it's weird. Like, some people would say it's the new agey stuff. And they automatically tune out because they've got, I don't believe in any of that. Okay, fine. Do that. Take your time right now. Go ahead, turn it off. Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Now, for the rest of you who have remained, we're going to go into this because I believe exploration is the key to knowledge, and knowledge is certainly the key to the evolution of the self. And this is something that we must always, always reach for. So, let's go further. Linda, first, how are you doing? I know you were traveling a little bit recently, I was told. And, you could be a little tired, maybe. And I don't know. I've got odd ideas about what I want to do with you tonight. So, let's just see how this rolls and maybe experiment a little. Because I think it'll make the point. And you'll be able to, say at the end, hey, look, you can find out more about this in... Well, a couple of your books, about modern witchcraft, about, once again, about channeling, past lives. All these things are possible in the array of books that you have authored if somebody wishes to explore it. But anyway, how are you doing tonight, first of all?
I'm doing great. Thank you. I have been traveling. I just got back from L.A., so it's always a little tiring, but it was a great time. That's because I had so much fun. So I'm just kind of like, how that is. Hit those high frequencies, and then there's always a low, for a second. But it's great to be here with you all. So that's exciting, Chuck. How you doing?
Well, I'm actually in kind of high spirits at the moment, which really makes me a little bit, what should I call it? Mischievous a bit? So I'm kind of in, when things start to go good, I say, let's have more fun. I don't know why. I like to multiply these things. So I actually want to try something with you. And, and maybe you could direct us as to which books. Like I said, there's a whole bunch of them. I'm going to give you guys links to, to be able to go and check out her website and all of that stuff. And I'm sure we're going to promote that before we're done. But you game for a little experimentation tonight.
All right. I hope I'm not getting myself into trouble here, but yes.
Okay. You know what? If we do get ourselves in trouble, might be fun too. So it's okay. That's the way I see it. Worst comes to worst.
Run from a risky situation. So, okay, let's go, Chuck. What do you got?
Well, listen, we're not actually in the same room, so it can't get that bad. All right. but here's the thing. I have had people attempt to read me, and I do say attempt because, quite honestly, there are a lot of people that I don't know if they believe they have a gift that they don't necessarily know how to access, and they think they've accessed it and they're mistaken or not. But there are people out there that just are not very good at being able to read things themselves. And I don't try to fool them, but they make assumptions. And it's interesting to watch where those assumptions go and build. However, I've noticed that there are people with all sorts of, like, the scale, you know what I mean? The entire sort of a rainbow scale of colors when it comes to, you know, a very little bit of an ability they've tapped into, or a lot. And there are certain consistencies among people that have honestly done this. So I was curious to see what would happen if, I don't know, I mean, I'll throw it at you. I mean, everybody always wants to know about past lives. And like I said, I note a consistency in general about, like, you know, my past life. I'm never King whoever, or, you know, great historical figure. And that's actually the realistic part of what I get. When somebody starts telling me, you know, you were, you know, a Roman emperor and you happen to be this guy, you know, okay. No. I know that's wrong, but it's fun anyway. And sometimes I think they're just misreading things. There's a variety of things that can happen here. So I'm just curious. I know there's always a class of people that I come up with in past lives, and I just want to see what your impressions are. Now, it could be that, quite honestly, Linda West will come up with nothing. That's a possibility. We are at a distance. You know, perhaps, you know, she's not ready to do this. I gave her no real warning about it. So I just want to see what happens if we ask the woman who's written so much about this on the spot, what would happen? See what I mean about that mischievous sort of, you know, low-key kind of vibe I've got cooking here?
I'm going to say, I can go at this a couple ways, I guess. Sure. In all truth, for all the new age people that are, you know, that are freaked out by that, I've never considered what I did to be so much a psychic gift. Is that a very good gift at listening? Hmm. And what seems very logical to me, other people seem to miss. And so, as far as seeing your past lives, see, there's just not one, right? There's so many. So I could lead you to what I believe is what, like, if you were a client of mine, for instance, how would I do this?
Right.
For one, when it comes to past lives, I've actually never tried to read somebody's past life, so I could do it.
Okay.
I highly recommend that if you want to do it, like, really thoroughly, in a way that you can digest and change your life doing it, is to work with a hypnotherapist. Because, so for instance, I can tell you right now, this is something everyone can relate to in their own life. You know, there's that whole nature nurture kind of, you know, debate. Which is it? Are you born with it, or is it the environment you grew up in? And part of that goes into what we think about every day. So for instance, you know, if you find yourself drawn to Egyptology, my very logical psychic guess is you live there at some time. Because of all the things you could be attracted to, why are you an Egyptian freak? Mm-hmm. I think that we don't necessarily come up with new thoughts as much as we research things we already know. I don't know if you understand that, but so I would say, first, if you want to know what your past lives are, what turns you on now? What areas, like, do you get, like, stoked, like when you go to visit Salem? You know, is that something that turns you on? I'm thinking you're there. You know what I mean? It's like, into feeling like which side you were on, because I think there's been a lot of switching throughout the years if you're a magical person. But so I would say that's for anyone listening to this. The first thing is run down your really oblique and strange hobbies and what, you know, what you want to watch shows on. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm tuned into the Sphinx. Why is that? You know what I mean?
Okay.
Why isn't your let brother?
Me, yeah. Let neighbor? let me try and give you some here and let's see where it goes then.
All right.
I'll tell you that I've always felt, and not everybody feels this, by the way, you know, it sounds really trite, but the idea that, you know, you have a an idea about your ancestry and mm-hmm. you sort of go along with that and you feel comfortable in it. I certainly do. I feel as though, and I know something about my ancestry, but it cuts off at a certain point. You know, I know, for instance, that, look, you know, people that think Italians are, you know, one people, you're very wrong. And I specifically come from the people that were just about wiped out in Sicily. You know, this is why there are not too many people that bear my surname. Okay, for good reason. and that's part of it. That's part of my history, and that's part of my ethnic background, right? I also know on the other side that... quite frankly, my great-grandmother was literally, like, dragged out of her home and killed for practicing magic, you know?
Okay, let me tell you what I'm getting while I'm looking, okay? I was just getting before you said that. I feel like there was some, that you were actually alive during that time. Like, that something happened and the parents were killed, like, almost in Germany, Holocaust, kind of something like that. But you were definitely left as a child by the loss of that. I feel that. I also feel strongly, like, very rarely are people actually Nefertiti or, you know, whatever, Cleopatra or whatever. But I definitely feel like you were an emperor in, like, some of the Persian world. I'm not sure what. Like, maybe, like, I hate to, like, I don't hate to say it, but what were they called? The, oh, I have to think of them with an M. They were half black and half Persian, I think. I don't know. Wait, that'll come to me. The Genghis Khan people, like around then. Not that you're Genghis Khan, but like you're in that kind of, like, you were around then. But I definitely also get Roman for you, like Roman. Not before you said Italian, but like Roman, like a. Roman court or general, like high officer kind of, probably a general that earned his way into high officer at the court kind of thing. I'm definitely getting that from you. But you have scars. I will tell you, you have scars from getting left by the parents. Your parents were torn from you, like, as a child. But this is what I have to say in past lives. What you'll find when you work with a hypnotherapist. Now, I never meant to work with a hypnotherapist on past lives. I was actually acting and screen testing against huge movie stars. And one time my lips started quivering when I was up for Bugsy with Warren Beatty. And I had this girl that was very in tune say to me, I think there's something in your past that is like sabotaging you that you know, need to go check out. And this guy that came in the restaurant we worked at was a hypnotherapist. So when I went to do work with him, it was on what was blocking me from my childhood. But while we were under hypnosis and he had me on tape, he said, oh, you know, I don't think this came from this lifetime. Let's go to the lifetime before this. Now, while I'm under hypnosis, I start having memories just like I was having memories from my own life. And I'm talking about how I'm a cowboy in the 1900s and I'm like, I don't want to take care of my family and my dad died and I'm like, I know my name and all this. And it's like, and ended up doing a series with him for his books. But what I have to say is that certain lifetimes impact us. Like, the way he did it that I thought was so brilliant was he said he would take you – he said there's different times in your life that impact you, early childhood, and then he would take you to early adulthood, and then maturity, and finally how you left. So it seemed to be very important how you left your body going into the next realm. And that was in that, like, if you were angry and upset and, you know, alone, that you would carry these, you know, kind of like a scar with you into the next lifetime to work on that. Whereas if you, you know, died, you know, children around you, people loving you, like, it was a different feeling that came in. So we're all a compilation of all of these things, like all this myriad of magic and lives, you know, and what we brought with us. Hmm. And we're working with it through our family DNA, a lot of it, you know, it goes back, because when I got back to a time, like every time you look different, you're a girl, you're a guy, you're this, and you're that, you know, some lifetimes you're like, I was happy in that lifetime, you know, like I had a lifetime where I was like this fat, like English, like entertainer in like the 1700s or something, like Bette Midler. I had red hair. And after that session, I dyed my hair red because I wanted to connect with that, like, happy life. That was a good one, something went right. But so I would say anyone that's really interested in it, I would highly recommend going and working with a hypnotherapist, because it helps you heal also, like, because you can find, like, what was the root of something if you had something really horrible happen to you, especially in your youth, like, where a lot of times you didn't, like, you brought that in from someplace else. You're healing that from someplace else.
Right.
Karma, if you will, I guess, but...
Well, see, now, here's what's interesting about all the stuff you said about me personally, and I want to go back to that just because, and I want to get into a bunch of things you just said. See, hypnotherapy, I can never submit to a hypnotherapist. I've never been able to do it. I tried. I did the whole thing with the being medicated and sedated even, and it wouldn't take. Now, interesting thing you bring up here regarding what I found consistent, by the way, through anybody who's ever started even begin to try to tap into me, is they always come up with a consistently militaristic past. Which is unlike my current life. I could not serve in the military because of my eyesight. I probably would have. And I've always felt a connection to that. And it seems as though there is definitely always this consistent thing also about being left. In this lifetime, I've got parents that effectively weren't parents. And the thing is that I don't think I would have been comfortable any other way, other than fighting and scratching my own way through life. So that's probably a matter of comfort. So there's different things where you might repeat things that appear to be challenging or difficult, right? But it's because it's your process. It's literally who you are, even before you got here. And it seems to me as though I do feel a connection to my ancestry, like I said, more one side than the other. I feel almost like I've traveled through it at certain points. And indeed, when I did start to do, you know, the research, I found that, ever since the Italian side here was in America, we always served every conflict guaranteed, multiple soldiers from my family line went. And it seems to me as though that was probably very consistent there. And the history is lost on the family at a certain point. I don't know if you know much about Italian history, you know, but the Sicilians.
Italians, Muffalettos, Cancillas, Carusos, Cascia. Yeah, all Italians. I wasn't a very Italian, but no, I don't know the history.
Well, the thing is that, when you look at the differences between the city-states that used to fight each other, Italy was not a unified country. Long time. You know, people think of it, Roman Empire became Italy. Yeah, that's not exactly the step-by-step process by which this occurred. Even the language that we call Italian is not even legitimate to the individuals that were there, basically, before. Because there was the Kingdom of Sicily was clearly separate from Sardinia, which was clearly separate from Rome. And again, if you go to the different islands, and there are many islands there, you got Capri and you got Sicily most prominently that I can think of off the top of my head, but there's a few other small places. This is not the homogenous thing that a lot of people think it is. And I know for certain that, and here we go, I know for certain. Well, do I know for certain? Let's find out. That I certainly experienced some of this. And the thing where you said, you know, genocide and all that. Now, I don't know about this other thing about the Middle East. That's a possibility, just, again, knowing the history, which I had to study. I felt compelled to study. When you talk about the people that came through at certain points, there were individuals that nobody knows what their national origin was. For instance, the Huns, nobody really understands where the Huns came from exactly.
They have ideas.
And, of course, when it comes to Genghis Khan, I mean, one could say, and we've seen this, you know, this study genetically, one out of every, I don't know, so many males, and it's a very, very high percentage, can literally trace their genealogy somewhere to Genghis Khan.
Get right? Out. Really?
Yeah. So it's because they spread.
All
and,
right.
Yeah. So, I mean,
but let me,
yeah, go ahead.
What? Okay. So currently, okay, no, if we're going to get mischievous, you better watch out. Okay, so currently.
Let's have fun. That's all I got to say.
Oh, hearing this, like, what is your current family life? Like, are you a parent? Do you have kids? Are you?
Yeah, I have children. I have two older ones and one younger one. Could never maintain. Here's another fun thing. I don't think I ever really maintained long relationships with partners. No matter what my intent is, that's just the way of things. You know, I always, I don't even, and I actually feel very, very old. I don't feel as though I ever get to live this long, quite frankly. And, you know, this is an odd thing. I'm getting the long life because I didn't get the life of the soldier this time. You know, and I'm sure there's a reason for that. I don't know if I always got to have offspring, but two with my first wife and one with my current, and you know, done that three times. You know what I'm saying? This is a different sort of life for me this time, and I think I'm learning a different lesson. And I got go ahead.
Well, it sounds to me like just what I picked up heavy about the loss of parents, right? And then you experience the loss of parents. And then it sounds like your kids, your older kids, maybe experience that, not through your fault, you know what I mean? Like, but like through separation or whatever, I'm not sure.
Yep.
But like, you know, in the end, it's all about healing that wound, you know what I mean? So it's like you have that chance with your son. So like to stop that, you know, to stop that, the loss pattern, you know what I mean, or with your kids, because it seems like it's come a long way, you know what I mean?
Right.
I picked it up, you know, and it always stops with somebody doing the work, you know, somebody more conscious doing the work. I'll give you an example that's kind of private, but whatever. I was raped by a babysitter when I was 5 years old, which is how I had a near-death experience, which I recovered under hypnosis. That's what it was. That was my self-worth issues and all of that. Okay. So it's like, no, you know, it was obviously repressed it for years, but when I finally talked to my mother about it, she admitted that she too had been raped at 5 years old. Mm-hmm. And never told me. Okay. And I'm like, okay. Now, then I got a phone call at work. My son was, and I started thinking about DNA lines, healing, like where do you heal the pain as a conscious person? Like when you bring it down the line, well, who stops it but the conscious person's choice, some different choice. So I remember when I had my son, I was like, you know, a little worried. I'm like, you know, what is this is like, this is like a frequency in my line. Like I got to watch him, you know? Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, early 1990s was when I had my son, like, and it was starting to come out then, like in the days I was born, you know, it was like nobody talked about, like, you know, rape, child abuse, incest, or any of that stuff going on. Not that that was the case with me as a babysitter, but like it wasn't really talked about. Like by the 90s, people were aware and starting not as anal as they are now about watching their kids, but they were still like, well, maybe I shouldn't let you play with that older boy, you know, something like that, kind right. of a little more aware. But I was at work and I got a phone call. My son was 5, he was in kindergarten. And it was the school, and there was a cop on the phone, and he said, your son's been involved in a molestation event at the school. There was a molester at the school. And, you know, I just want you to know he's okay. He's here. And immediately I'm like, oh, my God, you know, everything I feared. And he said, I want you to know he saved the young boy. Your son saved the young boy from being molested. He came in and caught the guy and got the principal and saved him, and we're giving him a hero's award. Okay. So, big breath. I went from thinking he was a victim to my son getting a Hero's Award at five years old. And when I talked to him about it, he said, I was in the back of the room, Mom, and I started thinking, Owen's been in the bathroom a long time. And then we were doing math, and I raised my hand to come up to the board. And when I got there, I said to the teacher, Owen's been in the bathroom a long time. And she said, go get him. And that's how he walked in on this man, changing this boy's clothes. Because at that time, California, everything's open. You could walk around, you know, it's, you know, right, all outdoors and everything. So, and parents were always there, like helping with the kids, you know, and stuff. So it's like, and this molester had come in and was trying to change his clothes. And my son walked in and he said, well, I'm his dad. And my son's like, no, I know his dad. And then got. So what I'm getting at this is like, there was a pattern that came, and I'm not going to get into, because it came from a past life where I abused my power in certain situations, if you will, that freaked out the guy on tape. Like, by the way, it's like, that's a whole other side. I'm not sure I'm open enough to getting that weird and honest, but like, blew this guy's mind after that. He's like, I've never heard anything like this. I'm like, yeah, welcome to my world. I was a cheerleader, and now I'm like talking about freaky stuff.
Well, but you know what? This is what the world makes us, okay? And I got to say, you know, that story is just, it's a great story, first of all, because it's got a good ending where, you know, something was put a stop to. And this kind of thing needs to be done, and it's just like, you know, I've got one of those sort of stories too. I could tell you that, you know, you name an abuse that a child could suffer, I went through it. Now, I had to learn to go from victim to actually predator at a certain point, and not sexually. Let's not go there. But I got victimized that way, but that never like that. I had to learn to be predatory in my behaviors as a child because I had to take care of myself.
Of course.
And that almost seems like that was the path I chose. And I'm not exactly sure why, except that eventually, it seemed as though this time around it was to learn how love works. I think that I actually didn't have that in me. It's very new. I understood it transactionally, okay? I understood it in a, you know, in a business sense. I understood it in a, you know, this is how you adapt and overcome. I understood that. I understood it as a mechanism, but I didn't really experience it. And right. I don't think I got to do that before. I think that my short life was dedicated to trying to do things honorably before, although maybe it didn't always turn out that way. All right. Nice. And I think that all of that kind of culminates in this hopefully being my last trip here. you know, that's where I think it's at. And I think that's an interesting evolution that maybe you could explain better. So I didn't want to focus on past lives the whole time, believe it or not, even though I kind of threw that curveball at you there and said, let's get weird, Linda. I really appreciate you doing this, but yeah, go ahead.
Side note, I remember being tantalized. This was 10 years ago, before there were memes, but it was some meme. It's like, oh, so you think you're conscious? Go over to conscious.com or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So I went over there, and all it said was, do you have a baby? You're not conscious. Your karma's continuing. You have no babies? Congratulations. You're conscious. Your karma is not continuing through your DNA. And I was like, oh, well. Well, that's a way of thinking about it. You know what I mean? I'm like, well, I never thought about it like that. So I don't know. What do you think about that? Well, that might be true. You know what I mean? Because does your karma continue through your DNA, through having, you know what I mean? To the point where, like, you don't feel like you need to have it anymore. Like, I don't know. Or I don't know. I'm throwing it out there. I'm not saying I know this, but definitely in an overpopulated world, it's something to consider. But, you know, I don't think the monks or anybody are having kids. But I don't know.
Well, see, but does it have to be one or the other, Linda? Because truthfully, I can let go of me. I can just walk away and not come back and allow the, you know, the natural physical world to continue. It doesn't necessarily, look, it's not connected to all of what my perceptions are or what it is we're all actually a part of. I mean, we are represented here. We're using these things we call our bodies in this world, best we can reckon based on the senses we have. But I don't think it has to be one or the other. I very much, you know, I mean, I know people would say, oh, in a practical sense, you're passing along. But everything is not wrapped in that DNA either. You know, there are very big differences. So I would say, why not both? I think conscious.com or whatever probably didn't have it right. You know, they might have had half of the story, which is interesting to me because...
I really don't know. Yeah. I thought it was amusing.
No, it's cool.
You know,
I love
the more I think about what's going on in this thing, I think truly we're just... I think Earth is like this amazing... I don't know, like, kind of like if we were interuniversal travelers, you know, I think Earth is like Hawaii or something, because it's like I get the idea when I like commune with outer world spirits, as weird as that sounds, like the water that we have here, mm-hmm. It's no joke how rare that is. And it's like, and here's the other thing, and this is another thing is, like, if we're multidimensional beings, like, if we listen, for instance, I was only really able to take off into the spirit world because so much of it is based in science, and I could, like, go back to Pythagorean theory or Einstein and be like, well, Einstein said this, and, like, like, for instance, he said that we could study all the aspects of matter down to the quarks and leptons, the smallest thing we could get to. And the truth is that all the bits of matter and all of the universe is still only 0.0001% of the universe, and the rest of the 99.99999 is space. And he said the one thing that we're, so that means we are also 99% space. Mm-hmm. That always kind of started to blow me away. So if we're 99% space, and that's divinity, and that's eternal, and that's, you know, creative, you know, God, divine essence, because Einstein thought it must be God, this pulsing thing that unites us all and is ever-growing and creative and within all of us and unites all of us, it must be God. And Einstein was really not, like, I think it was, I don't know, whatever, Jewish, but so God somewhere gets into science just as science, you know, gets into God. They go back together, you know. When I go and teach the law of attraction, or, like, I can do it from the witchcraft art side, but in the end, I end up talking about frequencies and the science side, because it's the yin and yang. They fold into each other at some point. So, I think that for us to squish ourselves into the third dimension, the first dimension is a dot, the second dimension is a line. So the third dimension is the first place that there is matter. So it's the first place where you can actually take form. So if you're thinking about it, there's this great seer called Kryon, and he says in his writings that when other astral beings pass us in the universe, and we wear like literally a badge of Earth. Like, we're the badasses. We're the ones that squished ourselves into the first place where you can actually get into a body. I mean, we're dealing with taxes and gravity and death. You know what I mean? It's like, that's not where we're from, you know, in our multiple, like, other selves. Like, so. But I also think it's the place where, like, if you were, say, you're this ultra-powerful being, and you're a Ferrari on the road, and you start hearing this click, like, you know, it's like this knock, you know what I mean? And you're like, okay, I've got this Ferrari, and then you're hearing this knock in it, and you're like, okay, you know, and you're trying to figure out, what's the problem? To me, that's kind of like, where's the crick, you know, where's the... our Achilles heel in our power of manifesting whatever we want. You know, what is that that's stopping us? It's that knock in the Ferrari's tank. It was like, shoot, okay, I know I'm a Ferrari and I can keep going, but it's like, okay, so the third dimension is kind of where you pull it out. You pull the engine out to the bare, and you're like, okay, where's the darn knock? I'm down to mind, body, and spirit. It's one of these three, you know? Right. And yeah, that and the water. I've done, you know, birthing like things with like sound healing things, and the first thing that came out, of course I'm a weirdo, but the first thing that came out of my mouth was, oh my God, thank God it's a water planet. So I kind of think we maybe are the badasses of the universe, like the best, the brightest and the best, and we squished into this dimension, and it's really tough, but boy, are we going to have some stories to tell, kind of like going into the Amazon. So what do you think about that?
You know, I can share in that idea and simultaneously think to myself that on another level, this could also be a zoo. And, you know, here we are. Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, what do you mean by a zoo?
Well, I mean that, you know what? You can go and examine the lesser beings that are beautiful and have their, you know, very interesting ways. And if people want to pass by, you know, not people necessarily, but entities want to pass by and check out what it looks like to be able to watch something in slow motion, you know, in a very primitive sort of crude form. Here we are. We are the zoo. You know, what do the religions often say? It's this kingdom, that kingdom. Well, what are kingdoms? Animals are in kingdoms. You know.
Oh, my God. I like my idea of being floating angels and coming here for the water instead of the zoo. I don't like the idea of thinking I've been Planet of the Apes, but you, who knows? I mean, the thing is, all I really know is, like, I don't know. Like, I have ideas, but...
See, that's where I end up when you know, sitting there and grappling with God, the concept, when grappling with consciousness and the things that can be measured but not really truly reckoned with, like space. You know, it is a thing, but what is it? Is it emptiness? No, it's not. You know, is there connectivity there, or is it just simply that we don't have the sharpness of resolution to understand it just yet? Because, look, these eyes, as I well know, are very crude instruments. And the mind is something that can be developed and changed all the time. It is subject to alteration. So, you know, here we are. And also, by the way, measure the mind. You know, you can't. So, you know, here we are with a whole bunch of science that should definitively prove and disprove things. And yet, okay, show me how to prove that you exist, or show me how to prove that anybody exists, or that we're not living in a situation here where really this is just the grand elaborate dream of one consciousness, okay, and try and disprove it or prove it, right? You know, or even the Satanists completely insane who believe that they are their own God. And we are the, you know, perhaps we are the figment of one strained imagination. That could be interesting, might be incomprehensible to some, but see, here's the thing. I know one thing, and that is, just like you said, I don't know. Okay. I don't know. I have ideas. I love that. Which,
right.
You know, which, sorry, I know we just killed like 40 minutes on this, and like, I didn't give you a chance to talk about any of your stuff yet. I just, like I said,
like, we're talking about stuff. I don't know. We don't have an agenda.
Yeah, exactly. And I love this, but let's try and boil a couple of minutes down to an agenda. How about that?
Whatever like, Chuck.
Okay, look, let's take a stab at it. Let's see if it works. No, I clearly I wanted to do this a little chaotically with you just to get an impression of how the process works, let you think out loud, and I think mission accomplished. So that's great. And look, I don't want to even return to the whole past lives thing, because that could be a long process. And
honestly, some of the stuff I'm getting, I don't think you want me. I mean, I'd rather talk to you personally. Actually, if you really want me to give you a reading, it's like, you know, I mean, because who knows? I could make you cry or something, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if I'm being real, you know what I mean? It's like if I'm being like real with what I feel and what I'm getting about some things, it's probably not something to share with a group. It's just like,
no, fair enough. And we'll.
Or, I mean, when we talk privately, you know, I can tell.
Okay. No problem. I'll tell you this though. I got no fear of whatever it is you could bring up. But it's okay. We'll do that at a future date. How's that?
Yeah,
anyway.
Sure.
No, I enjoyed this though. I hope you have so far. And I want to get down to one of the things that might be on your mind. What's the first book that comes to your mind? As I said, you've written many. I'm going to give you guys the links in the show notes. You guys listening out there, believe me, I didn't forget you're there. I want to do that, but where should we focus? What's on your mind today that you think would be a great message to spend the last bit of our time with here today to get at, which might have absolutely nothing to do with what we just talked about?
Okay. you know, I was really getting that this year in particular, for anybody out there, and maybe you, that this attunes to, but like it's a golden ring year. Like there's certain times in people's lives when I read them, or like when I'm around them, and they're in a window, you know. Very often the window comes young for people, you know. It came for me at 17 as a model, like, and sometimes when the windows come when we're younger, we're not ready, we're not mature enough, we're not ready to handle what's coming our way, you know, especially if it comes with a lot of you know, celebrity or money or something like that. Mm-hmm. But we're actually in another, like, I feel like there's like where usually I feel like certain windows come up in certain people's lives and I can see like this is really a window for you. I feel like we're having like I'm not going to say a global, but I really feel like all of America, there's a new window. I think we've all disintegrated from what we were in a lot of ways, like 52 pickup. And people have had to realign. I mean, there's been a lot of depression too. So it's like, you know, we've had to let go of a lot of things and change things. And I think it's a time when there's a big force available for us to like go toward what we want. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Goethe, you know, the famous poem by him, he talks about begin it, you know, begin it now. And he talks about that once you begin it, like the forces of the universe will align behind you. So I want to tell people, like right now, if you have a dream that maybe you've had set aside, like maybe David that works with you that needs to be a famous like voiceover person that we should talk about. But mm-hmm. In any case, if you've had that dream, like this is the time to dust it off and go for it. Especially since like before there was an ageism thing going on that like along with like racism, like it's being addressed and kind of set aside. So a lot of people that think like they're too old to do something, it's just not true. And then people are living to like 100 years old now. Like when they do the actuary reports, they're like, oh shit, you know what I mean? It's not 85. I don't have enough money. But that said, like that means like, you might have a lot more years left in your life than you think. This is on the practical level. See, I always work on mind, body, spirit with people because first mentally you got to know like you might still have another 40, 50 years on the planet. Like it's not over. You can go in a completely different direction right now and be a success in it. You know, they show that like it takes about 10 years of doing something really full at it to become an expert at it. So like, you know, and college only takes 2 to 4 years. So like, I mean, you can just, what I'm saying is like anything's possible. Like nothing is shut down. Like all avenues are open right now. And then you got to go into the like the spirit part about it. It's like, what is it that makes you excited, you know? And it can be a little thing. It can be toy cars. It doesn't matter what it is because there is a market and a business for that. And I think it's really time to start like going after the things that bring us joy and not listening to the fears and the why nots, like this can't happen, because then you got to go from the spirit getting excited to the mentally, well, how do I do it, to actually taking the steps, right? And people just don't take the steps. Everybody wants to talk about it. They want to get excited and maybe they'll talk about it, but very few people go to the next realm of doing research on, like, well, how do I write a book if I want to write a book, or, you know, and then that, the actual thing of writing the book. So the mind, body, spirit thing, if you get those three things together, you can do anything. You can be a movie star. You can find true love, because when it comes to true love, it's the same thing. I'll show you. We almost never marry or stay like in a committed relationship that all three sides of us are not crazy about. So for instance, say you meet a girl and you think she's like, oh, she's brilliant, she's super smart, you know, and then also, you know, maybe she has a great spirit, you know, she wants to save the world, she's bubbly and all that, but maybe you just do not find her attractive, right? Mm-hmm. On the body thing, and like, it's just not working for you, you know. Well, what you have there is a friend, okay? So it's like, you're not going to marry that person because all three parts of you are not in alignment. If you don't have all three parts of them on this dimension, you don't see anything take form. That's how you get things into your reality. You have to have a mind, body, spirit connection, all three sides, so it takes form. So when you do meet that person that hits all three sides, that's when you say, yes, 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 I'm in, because there's no doubts. And when you find a job or a passion or anything that makes all three sides of you go yes, you have got to follow that, like, because that's a gift. And right. Yeah.
No, that's amazing, because I'll tell you something. You're confirming what it is that I'm suspecting, and I'm feeling it at the moment. That's why I'm in this good mood, right? That this is an opportunity right now for anybody who's hearing what I'm saying, and many, many, many others. But point is, I guarantee you, this is an opportunity that's going to come up here in this very short time span during this year that may not be, you know, exactly as people imagined it, but the opportunity to change things and to remake things and to make that progress that never seemed attainable and all of that, that energy is going to be in the air this year. And I didn't feel like that the past couple of years. I felt the depression. I felt people melting down. I definitely, you know, observed it. I saw how people were turning on each other, becoming more aggressive, becoming more combative. And the thing is, I see it, and I don't know how to explain it, but I see it coming right now. We have the chance to change it now. Now, well, if you want to change it.
Was I that? Mean, really, our greatest sense is feeling. You know, we read frequencies, our feelings, we read this. Like, you're feeling it. You're feeling the wave. Like, you're feeling the same thing I am. Like, it's like something shifted. And it's like, you know, when you're in tune or, like, trusted is more like, and that's another thing I should say, you know, like, part of being aware and in your life is trusting what you feel, and not like, not so much your mind, because your mind will kick up fear, but like what you feel, like, you know, it's time to start giving that a voice. Like, your body has a voice also. Like, I used to have a lot of people, I've written diet books also, like Tao of Diet and stuff, to help people get in balance, because a lot of people fight their weight, and I didn't like to see people spending their energy fighting what should be natural, okay? Because we're born divine. We're born to be divine, because it's not in our body's interest to carry a bunch of extra weight or be healthy, unhealthy, or any of that. It's in the survival of the fittest for us to be lean and in shape and all of this. So it's like everybody's always fighting their body, like, oh, I got to, my body won't let me be thin, or my, but like, no, your body's on your side. You're not like, but like, people make an enemy out of their body too. That's like, you just got to not do that anymore. You got to be aware, like, every part of you is magical and wise. In fact, they found that our heart actually has a little brain in it, and that when we act from that place, when we move out of the head brain and go into the heart brain, this is science, not me just making up some fluty stuff out of the air, that that's when, of course, we make better decisions, you know, because so many times we're like you said, like people battling, especially we're not seeing each other, right? Some stupid avatar of a cat or something, you know, and they're like, they're saying something you don't like or agree with, and you can say something nasty to them because everyone's dehumanized. We're not in front of each other, things we'd never say to each other in person, but it still slashes people, you know, it still hurts them, but... Anyway, I lost track of where I was going with
that. No, it's okay. I understand. Look, the thing is, though, I just feel as though this is a different sort of time than we've experienced recently, and we're entering it now. I don't know why it is I have that sense. I'm not saying that I'm going with astrologers here or anybody else's sense, but I think if somebody hearing this says, look, it's been a rough couple of years, and I've had these troubles, and maybe you've known somebody who has gone through serious changes, seemed to break down, everything else. Maybe you've done it. I've known plenty of people that sort of snapped over the past 2 years, honestly. This is exactly the point at which we can recover that, we can adapt, we can overcome, we can do better. I feel an optimism that I'm telling you I have not experienced. I don't think ever at this point in my life. I've only been alive for almost 50 years. It'll be 50 years soon. But you know what? It's that's the way I feel about it. And definitely, I'm gonna give you guys the links to explore books and all that. You know, The Modern Witch is what I wanted to focus with you on today, and I didn't get there, but it's okay. Because somehow I feel like this message needs to be out there, Linda. What are your thoughts on that, though?
No, I agree with you. I mean, we both just kind of had the same feeling about that, and it's and I think it's time to, you know, go out and do what you love, because it's time. Because and not only that, more than that, like you said, I think is really important, Chuck, is that more than that, we have the ability to design our lives, because now with the marketplaces wide open, and in like where before, like, you know, I remember talking to a friend of mine that works at Disney high up, and she was like, oh God, if I could only have a 4-day week, what a different, my life would be so different. I could have a day to sing and do what I want to do. Well, the fact is, like, and one of the top things when I talk to people, like, oh, I want a job with flexibility, and or maybe I can work out of my home. Well, now that's something that's available for anybody pretty much to ask for. Like, can I work a couple days at home? I mean, because the world, and that's something a lot of people have wanted. As much as people want to go back and work in the workplace, a lot of people also want the flexibility that goes with, like, being able to pick up their kid from school, you know, in the middle of the day and still be available by phone or whatnot. So I think it's a time when we can also carve out what works for us and our families and our time. You know, it doesn't have to be the strict 9-to-5 anymore, because that's all been thrown out the window.
Well, maybe also the harsh lesson may have finally, you know, struck home over the past, you know, decade and a half when it comes to the evolution of this technology, making all these things possible, on and on and on. A harsh lesson might have actually come home in some people's minds, and that is, it is not a good idea to be isolated either.
No,
see, that's
right.
The thing. And
right.
We are not designed this way. I don't care what design you think you're following, as far as, you know, look, you think God designed us this way, fine. You think it's, you know, part of the natural order that emerged out of chaos, fine. Look at the design, please. Because we're not meant to be isolated things in a box. This is not who we are. So that is part of the thing that needs to be kept in mind, too. Look, you can do things remotely and without having to deal with the public and so on and so. Yeah, okay. But don't lose sight of the fact that one way or another, you'll either have a good or a bad connection with others. And you're going to choose good or bad, but you're not going to lose your connection. As a matter of fact, if you do try to stifle that, I think it's one of those things that people need to be warned against. It will harm you one way or another. And I think we've seen that in the psychology, the rise in suicides, the people that are, you know, snapping one way or another. This is exactly the result of it. So all things, though, design it your way and get it done, because guess what? This is the time. So I'm feeling good, and that's the thing. That's ultimately what I wanted to come to with you tonight, is that there is a reason that this time period is the way it is. You know, we could talk about the idea that a good friend of mine always says, you chose to came. You chose to came. Right. Great English. You chose to come here at this particular time before you got here. And there's a reason for that. And I absolutely agree with her. She is one of the smartest fellow creatures I've encountered during this trip. And she always has great wisdom, and I've never known her to have otherwise. And she's always said, look, you chose to come here at this time for a reason. And I believe that it's time to do that thing you came here to do. It's just what I'm feeling in the air and well past the air. So anyway, where is the best place to go? I know we can get your books on Amazon. I know you're everywhere. Kind of surprised you actually sit down and decide to go through the low-key sort of experiment with me here tonight, because I don't know. I don't know if I was you, if I'd put up with me. Also, yeah. But I really appreciate it. Where should people go to go ahead and take a look at what it is you have to offer, which is a variety of things regarding this stuff and getting into this world? I appreciate you. So where should they go outside of the links I'm going to give them?
Oh, thanks. Well, I'm honored, by the way, Chuck, to be here. So really, thank you for having me on. You know, Amazon is where all my books are. I'm on YouTube also under Morning Mayan, like Good Morning and then Mayan, because that's when I started my YouTube channel. And I do teach a lot. I have playlists about frequency, working with frequency, manifesting, things like that. Mm-hmm. I also have a website. You can go to my website, which is morningmayan.com. And I give away, you know, a free book if you want, like you join my newsletter or whatever, you get a free book. But it's a great book. It's a triangle plan. And really, it's a lot. It's very important, because when people go to manifest things, a lot of times they don't want it, you know, all the way. Only part of them wants it. So, and then they don't get it, and then they think they can't have what they want, but they never really wanted it. So it's a good book to start with, and that one's free. So,
excellent.
And then I would say, like, if I would lead people to a book on Amazon and you just want to check this out, I would say that my book, The Frequency, is the way to go, because the first part is very logical, a five-step process on how to get manifesting and get what you want, you know, whatever it is, love, a vacation, you know, money, career. But then it goes into the channeled work that I channeled with White Eagle about frequencies. And that's just like global, universal, like knowledge. That stuff is like brilliance. I don't know where it came out of me. And I'm so glad that when I finally, like, later fact checked it and more things came to light that I wasn't made a fool. I'm like, I'm really sticking my neck out here with this channeling stuff, you know. It's like, but it all ended up being, you know, true and right. Thank God I'm a clear channel. But I think it'll really connect people on a whole other level, because angelic talk has a fluidity and a cadence to it, like a poetry, right, that, you know, I've had people say that read it, like, I know you wrote this with angels because I heard an angel when I was a kid, and like, it's got the same rhythm. So I think it'll be very healing for a lot of people. So you get kind of both the easy five step, and then you get the more in-depth, like, background foundation of why frequencies and how they work on a scientific and spiritual level. So my big pitch, Chuck, I'm going to leave it there.
Great. And look, Morning Mayan is also your Twitter handle, I think. And
Yeah, I don't really put a lot out on Twitter, though. Honestly, I just don't, like, you know, probably don't want to go to Twitter. I'm usually ranting about something politically over there. But YouTube is where I'm most active, going back to, and that's where I have the bulk of my information. So.
Right. So, look, I'll make sure to put the YouTube channel in the show notes, guys, and definitely follow what she's doing. Look, thing is, I guarantee you'll learn something even if you're not trying. Just paying attention to what she has to say, and also go follow the Twitter channel, because it's fun to look at that stuff too that she puts out once in a while, because it's good. Anyway, Linda West, once again, really appreciate you. I'm looking forward to reading more of your material, actually, and also exploring the YouTube channel, and gotta have you back, and maybe I'll do something even stranger next time with you. And we'll see where that goes. Because
you're trying to scare me, Chuck, but I've worked with ghosts. It's going to be tough.
We shall. You will be. You know.
Thank you so much for having me on. Bye, everybody. And thanks again, Chuck. I'll come on anytime you want me to.
Thank you so much. Linda West, guys. We'll be back after this with Blind Joe. Stick around.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Uncle, I'll bet you remember the time when Benjamin Fulford said that the Asian Secret Society was going to dispatch ninjas to take out the Illuminati to change the entire world for the better.
That is never gonna happen. That never did.
It never did it?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, because there's a lot of false promises.
It's fools? I can't say one.
We better not say and be polite, but there are no false promises at the Ocelli.com radio network.
That's exactly it. It's truth, the point, right to the point. And this is what I like. Straight to the point.
Ocelli.
Ocelli.com.
Listen now.
Revelation through conversation.
Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, she knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination look into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
Revelation through conversation.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're listening to the Ocelli Effect at Ocelli.com.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to Larry-Hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at Amazon.com in digital or physical form.
Ocelli.com.
Well, second hour of the Ocelli Effect begins now here at Ocelli.com. However, quick announcement before I get to my special returning guest once again. The man calls himself Blind Joe, and last time I cracked a bunch of blind jokes, and still, even though I had him say on air, he understood why I was doing it. He's blinder than I am, but it was a mutual act of love, breaking each other's chops and having fun about that. Still, some people went, oh, you were kind of mean to the blind guy. I'm like, yeah, no, I wasn't. Believe me. He understood what I was doing. And if you don't, you know what? Bless you. It probably means you're fully sighted. Anyways, the thing is, quick announcement. You know, I am going to probably pull back a bit on the show. And the reason is there's going to be a full 3-hour-a-day show that's going to go on in its place. And it's not that I'm stopping what I'm doing or stopping what I'm producing. It's just I'm going to slow it down a little because I'm going to take on a three-hour-a-day air shift. And with good reason, and it's going to be with a very interesting network, and I'm hoping it's going to go to some new places. And, you know, those of you who have stuck with me on my own little lily pad here in the grand pond of the internet, we're just going to add some water, baby. Okay. That's the way it's going to go. And it's going to be on regular broadcast stuff, you know, in first run live, all that. So get ready for the Chuck Ochelli show, which will be different than the Ochelli effect. That's coming very, very soon. Still working out all the details, and you will get them here as I have them. It's going to be something different, and I hope you guys are going to come along with me for the ride. So, enough of that. I want to get to my guest. I've already held him up long enough. Blind Joe, a country artist of sorts. And I know he might say, well, a country artist of sorts. No, I'm a country artist. Matter of fact, if you listen to one of his latest tracks, which is, man, way more polished than what you were doing before. And don't get me wrong, I like the little bit of rough pieces that were in there before, but I'm liking this polished vibe you got, which is a little more intricate. I just found out that you did all the guitar parts. I was going to ask you about the guitarist on this because I know you can play, but then again, you might look for somebody else's, you know, pieces of this, but nah. It works out perfectly with you playing everything. I want to talk to you about that. And also whatever other... Here I go tripping over my tongue tonight for some reason. Whatever other music you've been producing... There, I got it out. You know, I want to hear about that as well, because I definitely see that you're a highly talented artist in a genre that doesn't always impress me, brother. I got to be honest. I hear a lot of it and I go, I've already heard this. And the funny thing is with you, I get familiar stuff like that. And I also get something a little different. Blind Joe's a little different than these other guys. And I love you, man. And I played, by the way, various times on my little DJ shows, a little something called I Will Not Comply. If you guys didn't know, it's like, well, because I play all kinds of music on there. When that country music came on, everybody went, Chuck's mixing in the country music there. Eh, it was Blind Joe, okay? And I kept telling you guys that, except nobody listens to me when I'm a DJ, Blind Joe, only when I'm babbling like this. So with that, let me shut up and ask you how you doing tonight, brother.
I'm doing great, brother. Thank you so much for that awesome introduction, man, and for having me on. And, dude, congratulations on the Chuck Ochelli show. I cannot wait for that, man. No, you well-deserved, brother, with a beautiful, beautiful radio voice that you have. I can't wait to hear you kick some ass on the big-time airwaves. That's wonderful, man.
Well, I appreciate that, man. And look, I already started talking to them about indie music artists that, you know, need more attention. And awesome. you know you're on that list, so.
Well, I sure appreciate it, man, and I definitely appreciate that you say that, you know, you don't really listen to a lot of the new country or the modern country, but you dig what I'm doing because you see a little bit of the new stuff and a little bit of the old in it. And I think that's what I've always tried to do with the music that I make, is just, I think everybody does it, you know, you just put what has influenced you I've always kind of stuck with my roots as far as, you know, Hank and Haggard, and then I try to put a little Brad Paisley, Travis Tritt, and even a little Pantera and Guns N' Roses and some Bad Religion and NoFX into what I do. So
nice.
using the players that I have, thanks to my buddy Brent McCullough, he's my co-producer on all my latest songs, and he's got these guys that just know what they're doing, so we can really go to them and say, you know, hey, I'm looking for something that kind of sounds like this, but do your own thing with it too. And they're just such wonderful guys, and they put up a lot of crap from us because we're pretty picky dudes. But you know, I think it's okay to be a perfectionist when you're trying to release music to the world.
Well, and that's the thing, is that actually I got to say that, and this is, you know, me being Mr. Music Critic, and again, the worst guy you ever want to critique your music is, guess what, somebody else who plays music. So
yeah, right.
The thing is, though, but I'm going to do it anyway because I know you could handle it, and I'm not going to say bad things. Don't worry. But either way, I'm going to go through this a bit.
And even if you have bad things to say, man, that's fine. I think it's hilarious that people got on you for being mean to me. Last time I was on, what that tells me is that they obviously do not know me at all, because if they knew me even a little bit, they'd be like, dude, you should have been a little meaner to him. What were you doing? Hold him back.
But you know what? People can see you on YouTube and see what kind of guy you are. I like some of the YouTube stuff you put out, by the way, which is sort of, you know, let me give you the behind the scenes look before we even put out the big film, right? And
yeah,
I love
yeah.
it.
And I like to do that just because people, I mean, that's what excites me. You know what I mean? When I go on YouTube and I'm looking at my favorite artist or something like that, and if I see a little thing like, hey, here's an update or here's what I'm doing, automatically I'm like, dude, that's cool. I want to know what you're doing. So I figure, well, if I like it, maybe other people will too. And it seems to be doing all right for me so far. So.
Well, I definitely dig it. And, you know, the one track that I did mention to you just before we went to air, I was really listening to it intently because, again, it was much more refined than some of your earlier work. And it seems like you put a lot into it. And I want to focus on one of the most minimal parts of it first, which is the drums. I don't think you played the drums on this.
No, that's not me.
And I got to give kudos to your drummer for, guess what, the following thing. he stayed out of the way. He went with the work, and you know what? A lot of drummers, especially with something that does have some open air to it. See, country music has a bunch of open air to it. That's part of the art of it, where it's not all wall of sound all the time. Okay, that's not the purpose of country music.
You're right. You leave it really open and let everything kind of breathe and get that way. You get the natural sound of all the instrumentation.
Right, and that's the thing that this drummer did by not really, you know, there wasn't like unnecessary fills or you know. Stuff where he's trying to, you know, create stops that don't need to be there. There's a lot of different things drummers do, and I can play drums a little, but I don't call myself a drummer. But sometimes you get guys who see that open space as, you know, a percussionist, and they want to add, and they want to add, and after a while it's like, now I've got a lot of noise. Yes, it's rhythmic noise, but it's too much. Your drummer stayed right in the right pocket. You know what I mean? For this piece.
He really knows how to follow a scratch track, which is great because I can, you know, double an acoustic quick, throw down a vocal, and just by the cadences that I'm using in my acoustic playing, he'll know when to stop, when to start. And he really is. All the guys on the record on these last few songs I've done, man, have just been phenomenal.
Yeah, it's really, and that's the thing, is that everybody is actually occupying their space like they're supposed to, and there's a lot more intricate guitar work, where some of it, again, sounds like that very basic classic country. Again, mm-hmm. you mentioned Haggard, that's exactly what I was thinking, is some of that, you know, some of that slide there, I could see that in a Haggard song kind of winding its way through.
Steel guitar is for sure. It's all Hank Williams and Merle Haggard, and then you get like the, you know, when you hit the solos, we got kind of like a Brad Paisley-esque vibe going on with that really Brad Paisley chicken picking style guitar with the fiddle complementing it, and that was all, you know, we wanted it like that. So they were kind of talking to each other, and the goal really with the songs that we record is to make them have a live sound. You know, when I have somebody hear something and go, oh, did you guys like do that live in the studio? That's what we're going for, because most of our stuff is done. We send it to each other. It's all done computers. You know what I mean? Right. It's all over the internet, and we never get together in the studio and cut songs, which is unfortunate, but that's just the way it's done today.
No, I understand. And look, for efficiency's sake, who's going to, you know, put everybody up in one city and all that like we used to do?
Right.
I mean, you have the benefit of just experiencing some of that. I think before this, you know, again, I forget how old you are, but
I'm 30 or I'm 40. I'll be 40 this year in July. So,
yeah. So you know, playing earlier on, you got to see more what it was like before.
Yeah. And I love that, man. There's just something about the camaraderie of being with a bunch of guys in the studio and being able to really feel each other out. You know, it's happened for us now that we've done a few songs together and we kind of understand where each other's going, but there's just really something about the chemistry you get when, you know, especially, and I don't mean for this to sound narcissistic or anything, but I have a very powerful voice, and it usually, when I sing, if I'm singing with a band, the band gets into it more because they understand, like, all right, we're going to put on a show. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This isn't just I'm singing with the band. This is like, all right, we're here to play. Let's make it happen. Yeah. Which is why I did so good at the honky tonks out here on Broadway, and why I do so good out here is because of that reason, you know, because I put on a show. And so when you have that, even in the studio, you get that same energy, you know what I mean? And you're kind of on that same collective page, and you're like, oh, okay, we're like making music, man. Let's make it happen. And then that also usually gives me more of an advantage to be able to say, you know, hey, guitar guy, can you do this? Or hey, drummer, can you do this? Because I get kind of freaked out if I don't know people, mm-hmm. and they're like, oh, okay, we're going to record. I don't want to be like a bossy jerk face. You know.
No, I understand that, but you know, it's a weird situation to me. Like mentally, I'm having a hard time wrapping around how you did this, because it does sound like these are guys that are working with each other directly. There is a difference between that, and you can hear it sometimes. I got to be honest with you. I mean, again, a lot of people, they put together some stuff and it's supposed to be intricate and great, and all I hear is mechanical performance. Because it's not a group effort. You're not hearing a band. You are literally hearing, yeah, I slapped some tracks together and they sound right. But not with you. This is very different. And it's like, I got a vibe from it, like you said, where there's almost a feeling like these guys had to have worked on this in a way that they were personally interacting.
There is definitely a lot of pre-production that goes into what we do, and a lot of that is just between Brent and I, because we've worked with these guys, you know, with these same musicians now for the last few songs. Like I said, it's just easier to just, you know, they know what we're looking for already,
right?
In a sense, because they understand the kind of music that I'm trying to make and the stuff that I want to put out there, and so they're kind of in that vein already. And then if we do something, like I'm looking at doing a cover of God Bless the USA right now, just to release over the summer, I think we could use a refresh of that tune, and and that will be different, because, you know, so that with something like that, we'll go in and say, okay, guys, we're not really going for this Travis Tritt, Brad Paisley thing anymore. This has to be big and bold and in your face. This is America, and we love it, you know. So it's all really, that's all there really is to it. I mean, other than, I mean, we obviously speak in more musical terminology and tell them exactly what we're looking for and discuss it. But, you know, there's really, it really just comes down to them being incredible, talented, dedicated people that really just get off on making great music, man.
No, exactly. So I want to talk about this track. It's Glory to the Lord, right? It's called?
Yeah, Glory of the Lord, yeah.
Glory of the Lord. See, I knew I was going to screw it up. But either way.
No, it's okay, dude. I screw it up all the time. On stage, so no worries.
Excellent. Look, and that's the thing, though. You hear him laughing. He's like, look, this is the way it is. I love this energy where it's like, look, you're getting a creative experience here. It's not meant to be. You want to listen to the pre-recorded track, please do. But, I mean, it's like, look, this is not necessarily about that per se, about the pre-recorded track. It's about, you know, creating that vibe, that feeling. So, anyway, I want to get to this, though, because there's some odd elements in here that were like, again, I was like almost, it was very weird for me because I was like, there's kind of some new stuff going on here. But, I mean, literally, there's a yeehaw in this thing. I mean,
there is.
And I mean, normally, I got to tell you, people just throw that in and they try to, you know, make an homage sort of to the older country, so to speak. Right.
Yeah. You know, the thing of it is they throw it in like with the lyrics too. You know, I'm trying to think of some corny line that I've heard with the yeehaw in it. It's always some stupid bar song, you know.
Right.
we're all drinking all night singing yee-haw or whatever it is, you know, and yeah. It's like, okay. Okay, faker, sit down.
See, but that's the thing. I got the sense when you threw it in, it was toward the end of the track, by the way. If you guys go listen to it, you got it up on YouTube, right?
I do, yeah, yeah. It's all over Spotify, Apple Music. We got it at blindjoe.com, of course, if you'd like to support me directly. And
oh, yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's all over, man.
No, definitely. We're going to give you the blindjoe.com. You're going to get that website. I'm going to give you the YouTube channel, all this stuff, you know, stay in touch with them. All that's going to be there. But it was interesting. I want you guys to go listen to it because toward the end, there's sort of this feeling almost like the band is jamming. And I know it's pre-recorded, and it's not, you know, it's not like it's a fresh jam I'm hearing live, but you get the sense of that. And then he throws it in there, and I was like, well, that's funny, because that's like kind of where it belongs. You know, at that point, the thing is swinging.
That was all my you know, pre-production planning and stuff. With them, you know, I just told them, like, I want to do a nice out solo so that we're just playing it out and just giving it to God, you know, just wah, having a great time.
Right.
And then what I did after that is just, you know, cut the little vocal embellishments, you know, like that's what I'm talking about and all that kind of stuff. Just threw those in there on the beat and there you go.
Yeah, no, but that's the thing, is it came across as natural as opposed to those things where it's really forced. I mean, let's be honest.
Thank you, man. Thank you. And yes, and that means a hell of a lot to me, especially that you say that, because I know what a great ear you have. And it really, you know, these are songs that I'm very, very proud of. And so to have someone of your caliber say that, that's really awesome, man. I'm really glad you feel that way.
Well, and again, the neat thing about this track, and there's another one that I heard that which I cannot remember the name of, because I did not really give it a good, honest, close listen. I was just kind of putting it on while I was doing something. But
could be Hello Huntin' or Light of Her Love, one of the two.
That's it, Hello Huntin'.
Yeah, that's a North Dakota hunting jam that I wrote for my dad.
Oh, is that what that's about? Okay, because I just kind of had you know.
Well, actually, what it's about is leaving your wife to go hunting. So the hook is, let me think about it. I can't remember the words to my own damn song. Goodbye, honey. Hello, hunting. I'm so stoked for shooting something. I got the gun and the bow already loaded in my truck. That's the main first verse of the chorus there, and it's just a fun song. That again was another kind of Brad Paisley inspired tune where. Just told the boys, all right, we're chicken picking, guys. Just throw down and have fun with it.
Well, and it's like a short story is what I got from it, you know, where it's like and I like those. To be honest with you, it's like when it's all about just the hook, by the way, that's what drives me crazy about modern contemporary country. It's like, okay, that's the hook. I got you. I heard you already. And also, I mean, I'm gonna say some stuff here, and I don't know if you're gonna like it or not. But how many times am I gonna hear about the barefoot girl in the sundress? And
right, 10 legs, tight jeans, and blah 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 blah.
Yeah, that's wonderful and all, but come on, you know, just
it was wonderful. It was wonderful. The first time we heard it, maybe with, let's say, like Luke Bryan, I mean, well, Tim McGraw probably, if we want to go back even farther, but you know, it's all the same, and that's it. It becomes a homogenized product because of industry. Unfortunately, that's kind of what industry does, and people see it with other industries, but for some reason, and I think it's because of how well the recording industry has disguised what it does, they don't see it with the music industry. You know, I can't tell you how many people to this day email me and Facebook me, dude, I hope you get signed to a record label. Oh man, I can't wait till you get signed. And it's like, you know, man, if you knew, and this isn't even without record labels, if you knew what the executives were really like, you wouldn't want me to get signed, number one. But number two, this business in general is pretty cutthroat. I mean, if I'm being honest about it, you know, you got to have pretty thick skin to do 20 plus years in the music business and still kind of be wanting to do it, I guess.
Well, I got to be honest with you. I only experienced
a lot of people not do it anymore.
Well, that's the thing. I experienced it for about 10 years, and quite frankly, enough's enough. It just, you know, I realize, okay, so there's gangsters over here, basically, who are looking to rob you, you know, a penny at a time if they can, and they don't care how it comes. All right. And then you have what it is your art. And that's totally not even part of the conversation most of the time, regardless of what your art is. You know, it doesn't matter. They market you. And unless they own you, they don't do a damn thing for you, man. So
you got it. You got it.
You know, it's hard to want to be, you know, and it's always that weird contradiction where it's like, look, whether you got kind of a rebellious mind, you know, where you have this sort of, you know, rebel. I mean, obviously, you know, I will not comply with the mask and everything.
Right, right.
I mean,
right.
Clearly, yeah. You're not looking to just fall in line with social norms all the time, okay?
Right, never have.
And it's a hell of a contradiction to have to go, okay, now you own my name, you own my face, you own my music, and please let me have some money for it. I mean, that's really what the transaction is. And,
that's it. You got it.
And I, you know, on the one hand, it's great that, you know, it's kind of become decoupled from the greater corporatism that was, but they keep reinventing it, brother, you know?
Oh, yeah. And these guys, you know, and people think, well, you know, Spotify, and yes, you can make money streaming on Spotify. I will not comply. It's definitely made me a little money. It's not money that I'm going to like live on for a year or the rest of my life or anything like that, but it's something. But, you know, the labels are part of the Spotify equation now too. You know, Spotify's paying them however much they pay them in royalties. It's a ridiculous amount of money,
right?
So, you know, and then you've got, you know, you look at like what's going on now with Neil Young pulling his music from Spotify, which really, who cares? I mean, but apparently other people do, because now you got other artists doing it and the record labels are jumping on board. I mean, this is all, this industry stuff goes back to why I wrote I Will Not Comply, which is, to me at least, when you bring in industry that rules over everything, that's when the censorship starts coming in, and then they tell you what you can say and what you can't say, what you should think and what you shouldn't think. And
right.
You know, it they're doing it on a global level now with all this tyranny from Canada to Australia to the US, and if you look at the music, they're doing it, you know, with the pop music, and now country music is becoming pop. And what I fear is that my kind of country is going kind of to the wayside. Like, they're putting out a pretty version of it now with people like John Party and Luke Combs, and I appreciate those guys. They're great, talented artists. But I'm more of a Hank III, you know, punk rocker type of guy. Like, I want something that really hits you in the heart. And I think industry kind of takes a lot of soul out of it and puts more polish on what you're doing, which can be okay.
But you know, you bring up Hank III, and he's an interesting study in this, because on the one hand, he's, you know, the acceptable rebel for some people.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, you know, they turned around and jacked up that I forget what song it was, but it's like where he's going, look, hey, you know, you smoke too much weed, you drink too much booze, whatever. And they grabbed that and commercialized it.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is the weirdest thing in the world, because, all right, other people in other parts of the world or other parts of the country, I'm going to tell you something. You listen to, like, a country station in the South, they play the same songs over and over and over again. Like, literally, I was working, all right, a couple of years back, I was working as a glass glazier.
Here's another thing that you just brought it up, and I wanted to say it before I forget about it again. Here's another thing where industry has come in and ruined it, dude. Radio.
Mm-hmm.
Look at radio, man. I mean, holy crap. You used to be able to go from town to town. We used to take family vacations and stuff when I was a kid, and the first thing I wanted to do in every town we passed through was check out their radio stations, see what they were playing, and who's the new music in rock and country and pop and all this stuff. Right. I mean, try doing that now. It's the same homogenized crap everywhere, pretty much. I mean, you'll occasionally find an independent radio station somewhere, but for the most part, if you're talking major market, it's all...
Well,
it's all
Clear Channel, which is iHeartRadio, which is the same damn thing, and that's it. You know, but like I said, back to this thing. I used to work at this place, and I knew that. Ready for this? The third time that I would hear "She Thinks My Tractor's Sexy," I can't remember the name of the song, but I remember that refrain. "She Thinks My Tractor's Sexy." I can't do country, dude. Not at all. But I mean,
it's okay, man. It's okay.
You know what I'm referring to, don't you?
I do. Okay. Yeah,
it really turns around.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. You can do it. All right. Anyway.
Yeah, I've sang that song a time or two for a Nashville bachelorette party. So yeah.
Oh yeah. Listen, I was singing plenty of songs I didn't want to sing when I got hired to do stuff. This is what you do when you're a musician. Anyway.
Amen. Amen.
You know, if I could tell you how many times I had to sing, wedding bands stuff, Eric Clapton songs that I didn't want to sing. I'm not a big Eric Clapton fan. But, you know, it was like, Wonderful Tonight. Oh, that's original. Okay, sure. Yeah, we'll play that. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, dude. Rascal Flatts is like the bane of my existence. You know that song? I set out on a narrow way many years ago. What's that called?
Yeah.
Bless the Broken Road.
But, yeah, I was just thinking the Broken Road. Even I know that. And that was one of those things oh, my God, why are they doing this?
Oh, dude, okay. And every time you have to sing it at a wedding or something, I'm just like, oh.
It's just,
really, guys, we're still doing this? This song's like 20 years old now. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, why don't you just get me to, what was that persona? What was it? The alternate persona of the big guy there for a little bit.
Garth Brooks is Chris Gaines.
That's it, Chris Gaines. That's what I was.
Yeah.
Why don't you just have me do a Chris Gaines song? You know,
dude. And then he like switched back right away and was like, "Oh no, that was just a thing I was trying out or something." No, dude. That's who you want to be. I'm sorry.
I don't know.
And nothing against Garth Brooks. If you like Garth Brooks, that's fine. That's great.
No, that's
I think
cool.
Garth Brooks has some of the best songs that country music, you know, at the time had seen in a long time. He didn't write any of them, but
yeah, that's fine. Yeah, it's like Billy Ray Cyrus with the one song, you know.
Yeah,
look,
with Achy Breaky Heart.
If you didn't want to throw away your radio after a little while, I mean, but
then
that's
he,
the thing.
Then he sells out his daughter, and 20 years later, he's doing Old Town Road just to make sure the kids are really ingrained in the pop culture world, shall we say. I was going to say satanic pop culture world, but
yeah, well, you got to get your Doritos commercials from somewhere.
Right.
Look, it's frustration though when you see the way that, you know, something that starts out as an art form and is just hijacked.
It becomes a mass. Yeah, it is. You're right. It's hijacked. It becomes this mass marketed, just watered down version of what it was. You know, and that's not to say that, like, industry is totally bad, because, I mean, heck, we wouldn't have some of the greatest artists in the world. We'd never know about them if it wasn't for the recording industry. But, you know, they've taken the humanity and the soul right out of it, and just, it's all about money now. And that's sad. It's sad. Because the money, here's why I think it's so sad, Chuck, is because the money will come. Like, people love good music. Right. I know. I've been able to tour around this country for 20 years now, and make a meager yet decent living. I mean, I'm not rich by any means, but we make it month to month. And as far as a musician is concerned, you know, I know a lot of people think that, oh, you got to be famous and this and that and the other, but I mean, success is all in how you measure it, you know. And if you're feeding your family and able to play music for a living, I don't really see what could be better than that, at least in my opinion.
Absolutely. Look, but that's why, you know, more than anything, That's why I appreciate you, because you are doing this, and I know you're not the only guy out there. There are many guys like you, and in many different genres. I mean, look, if somebody's listening to this going, look, I don't really like country music, I'll tell you, there's other artists out there that are doing things like Blind Joe is doing, and I say, look, if it's something that you can appreciate personally, support it. If you love country music, though, yeah, you should get over to blindjoe.com and kick something in. Help him out, support him. He's putting out some music to the world that I'm telling you is definitely the whole thing about music to me is just one actual thing, and that is that if it's got a soul to it, then it's valuable. And there's definitely a soul to Blind Joe's music. You can hear it. Even in the steel guitar stuff, which, by the way, I was going to bring this up too, a lot of steel guitar stuff, I swear it's the same riff over and over again. Okay.
Yeah. They kind of do the volume swell with the, you know, kind of stuff.
And yeah.
We try to rock it out, man. I mean, my whole thing with the guys is this is rock and roll. You know, I mean, yes, it's country. And we want it to be, you know, as country as it can be, but as far as The steel, you know, we tell the guys, you know, put some distortion on it or do whatever you got to do. Let's really keep it country, but rock at the same time. There's a huge punk rock and metal influence in what I do, and so that's kind of where you get the different, I guess, out of the norm kind of stuff that we put on these records.
Right. I mean, that also might explain why it is. I just, and that's the other thing about music, is it's a feeling thing. I mean, they can shove certain things down your throat, and yeah, you'll get into them because they got, you know, somebody wrote a good hook. And believe it, there is something to the talent of an individual who can just conjure the hook. And there is something there, but it doesn't last in my mind. It's like, okay, I've heard the hook already. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and that's why I think so many of these songs, you know, the labels especially, they release music so fast nowadays. And of course, we're in an internet age where, you know, everything is now.
Well, everything must be on demand. Everything must be. Yeah, I got you.
They're kind of, you know, and now with stuff like TikTok, everything is hook oriented. You know what I mean? Because they're not really writing for the song's sake.
Right.
They're writing for somebody to make a viral video or like make a dance routine to what they're doing. And all it has to have is a catchy hook, because that's the 30 seconds that they want to put on this video and make it go viral. I mean, it's not about the music anymore. It's more about, well, I guess, like I said, the money and just what can we sell and how can we, you know, look at these people. They've been doing this for a while. I mean, you look at these people, like the guy that did the, what was the first one? I'm trying to remember. I want to say the Harlem Shake, but I don't think that was right. I think it was, there was something before that, but he had a song out anyways. Gosh, I can't even remember what it was, but it was like one of the first viral songs out there. And since that happened, you know, it's just like the industry does. Everybody tries to capitalize on it. So now that's kind of the trend, is, or how you get supposedly famous is you know, a viral video.
Yeah, but at the end
which we almost had with I Will Not Comply. I had 126,000 views in an hour on YouTube before they pulled me off.
Yeah, well, still, but you can go download that song, as he said, you know, at all these other places, and support Blind Joe. Do that, because it's a great song, first of all. Second of all, goes exactly with the spirit of, guess what, you guys, I know, listening to me right now, and me, I appreciated that song, the spirit of it, the actual music in it, everything. And, you know, that's another thing I want to get to with you before I run out of time, is that in this legitimate music that you're creating, you're actually creating songs, not just the 10-second where at the end of the line, quite frankly, you end up with what was it called, the Bugs Bunny for a minute there on TikTok, yeah. You know, where it's just this.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm looking at this going, this is, I get why this is entertaining, but really this is just, you know, a lightweight pervishness, and that's all it is. And I'm going,
my
come
whole
on.
Thing with TikTok is that I wish it would just stay with TikTok. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I understand the entertainment value, but like when you've got 30-second stupid music that makes no sense. We already have enough stupid music that doesn't make sense, and when TikTok's like overly stupid crap starts getting on Spotify, that's
yeah,
that's
right.
What I take issue with it.
Well, so but back to stuff that's not stupid crap. Your music, you know, here we go. Listen, some days that might be the best compliment you get. You know.
Right.
You never know. But no, I love your music. You know this. Anyways, to this, you know, I also want to make note that there is a legitimate sort of, and it's not forced. Again, nothing is forced in this music. Feels very natural. It doesn't appear as though, you know, you're trying to overdo things. I love that, because that goes to the general sense of the true genre. But also, there are very danceable parts here that, again, are both familiar and also a little different from the standard fare in country music, just a bit. And I'm wondering about that, because I don't know if you intended to write danceable parts or if it just kind of came, because there's a progression that goes on in a bunch of your songs, and they are not formulaic. Don't anybody get that impression. It's not like this is just the formula. But what I'm saying is that there is a general theme that builds through a lot of your work, where the song builds up and then you get into a dance part that seems like it naturally emerged from what was coming. Yeah, so I wanted to ask you about that, if that was intentional or if that's just, that's just the way it happens, Chuck, you know. I mean, tell me about that a little bit.
Yeah, man, that's definitely deliberate. I love those songs that kind of take you on a journey, you know, and by the end of it, you're just high energy, ready to rock, you know. And that, again, I keep going back to the punk rock and metal stuff, but that's really where that kind of comes from. You know, country music, we do it a lot more in like ballads. You know, we'll start off with a nice acoustic, maybe a piano, and then we'll kind of layer in some guitars and the drums will come in. And by the end of the ballad, we're just full force in it, you know. And rock ballads do it too, I guess. But that's kind of where I got that that build thing from, is just you know, as a kid I went to so many different like concerts and stuff, country and rock and all that, and I always loved that when you would be standing there by the stage and the song would kick in and you're like, yeah, this is great. And then they get a little bit louder and a little bit more rowdy and you're going, yeah. And then you're kind of jumping, you know, and then they kick it at the end of the song and you're just the pit's going crazy and people are just screaming. And, oh, you know, that's where I love that kind of thing. So I try to put that, in the songs that I write too.
Well, I'm curious
just to get that really high energy up there.
Okay, so now I'm going to go into the strange land for a minute here, because as somebody who was a hard rock and heavy metal artist, for live performances, right, sometimes it was great to do those builds and then you got people moving by the end, and then to have a couple of pieces that just did exactly the reverse.
And that's like Comply. Comply was like that.
Yeah.
You know, Comply just kind of came right out of the gate. Boom! I will not comply.
Right.
And again, that again comes from the metal thing. And I get it. Like, I think of bands like Slipknot.
Right.
You know, who just right out of it, man. Like, they hit the stage and bam, it's in your face and here we go.
Right. Like with Dead Memories with Slipknot, you got that thing that really starts to pound right away. Right.
Yep.
And yet the vocals are not necessarily, you're almost expecting the pounding rhythmic vocal and it doesn't go that way. Corey goes into a more melodic thing, which a lot of people would go, you know, I know not everybody's a fan of heavy metal either, but just saying there is something to this, is that I'm wondering, you know, if you're going to do more stuff like that too, where you kind of reverse it and kind of design your live shows that way. Because I haven't seen a full live show of Blind Joe yet. I would like to. Hopefully, you know, I'd love to see you come to Georgia, because that way I can get to you easier.
Yeah, man, I'd love to make it out that way. We're kind of focusing on up north right now for just booking the summer tour, because that's where I'm from. And so, you know, naturally you go where the money's at, especially in this business. But yeah, I would like to, I think toward the, and this will work great for us too, because we'll be up north for a while, so toward October we'll be coming back down here. And of course I'm in Nashville right now, but I'm gonna try to get some stuff going with like Georgia and Missouri and Mississippi and the areas around here that we really haven't hit yet.
Right.
And so hopefully with Comply doing so well, you know, we should be able to make something happen and keep this tour schedule going.
Cool. Well, do you have any upcoming dates? I also want to talk to you about, you know, Nashville before we're done too. But do you have any upcoming dates that you'd like to tell people about?
Sure. Let's see. If you're in Wisconsin, I'm going to be on the 20th. Is it the 19th or the 20th? Now I'm going to get this wrong. Damn it. the 19th, I think. I believe it is. We're going to be doing a gubernatorial candidate, Adam Fisher, out there. Really, really cool guy, great guy, and he's running, and so we're going to be playing a benefit in of course now I can't remember the name of the town. I'm pathetic, dude. I'm sorry.
No, it's but, okay. Look, if we go to blindjoe.com,
if you go to blindjoe.com, I'm going to have the information up there on by Friday for sure on that, and that'll be a Wisconsin kind of a rally thing that we're doing. And then let's see, April 9th I'm going to be at the Eagles Club in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, Mm-hmm. It'll be a good time, and that will kind of start off the summer tour, I Will Not Comply tour. So if you just head on over to blindjoe.com, and I'm also on Bands in Town too, the app. I don't know if people use that still or not, but excuse me, it's there. And I'll have all the show dates up probably by the end of this month or the middle of March. Just kind of depends. I've got a lot of stuff coming in right now, so I'm just kind of building everything so I can make a decent tour out of it. And then we'll be up and running, man.
Plus, all your songs are available as singles on, in the iTunes store, whatever it is they call it there, Apple Music now.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, everywhere.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm just saying there's lots of ways you can keep up with Blind Joe, and definitely go to blindjoe.com and check things out as they develop. I certainly would like to see some Georgia dates.
Yeah. If you want to check something, I'm sorry, man. I don't mean to keep interrupting you.
It's okay.
If you want to check something out before you make a commitment to buy or stream or anything like that, you head over to blindjoe.com. You can join that mailing list there, and you'll get a free song download of a tune that I wrote called People Like Me, which is a nice redneck drinking song.
Oh, I haven't heard that one. I don't sign up for every mailing list, so, I mean, but by all means, though, tell me about it.
I completely understand. I completely understand. I just want people to know, too, that when you sign up for the mailing list, excuse me, don't think that you're going to get, like, spammed and stuff. I'm a musician and an artist, so I'm inherently lazy. You'll probably get an email from me once a month, maybe, just telling you about new music and stuff like that. I know how annoying it is to get emails, so I don't send them.
there you go. I love that. I'm inherently lazy. I like how that just slid right out of your mouth. That's great. No, I used to say stuff like that when I was a musician, too. It's like, well, aren't you going to work harder? If I was trying to work harder, would I be doing this?
Right. They don't call it working music. They call it playing music.
You play music, exactly. Oh, man. So, meanwhile, I want to talk to you about... See, I love talking to you, because no matter which way we go, it's just, it's fun, it's great, and it's exactly what your music represents.
Man, likewise.
So, okay, two things before we're done. One is, let me get to that song, I guess, because now I'm curious. You're telling me it's a good drinking song. Now, when I hear that, you're setting me up a little bit, because it's got to be a good drinking song. I was alive, Joe, when they were playing, and I used to be a little kid in a bar, sitting on a bar stool in a corner, actually, when certain country songs and certain things like Charlie Daniels were extremely popular. Got to tell you, The Devil Went Down to Georgia, although a lot of people don't say it, was a drinking song.
Absolutely,
so,
it was.
So
still,
to me,
it still is. I can definitely vouch for the fact that it still is, because I've played it plenty of times with the boys at Tootsie's Orchid Lounge, and people definitely still drink to it.
And I mean, even the likes of Primus covered it. Hell, I covered it as a metal musician.
It's
one of those things that's universally great for drinking. So you're setting up a pretty high bar here with this song. So tell me about it. You said it's called People Like You?
It's called People Like Me. Yeah.
People Like
It's
Me.
Actually a song I wrote all the way back in like 06.
Okay.
And, the song that, I'm sorry. Dang.
No worries, man. Take your time.
The song is actually one of the first tunes I ever wrote that when I sat down and thought, okay, I don't want to write something funny or witty. I just want to write something about who I am. And I wrote it, and I think I maybe had like two other songs written at the time. And so I went over to my grandpa's place, who was a big influence on me. And I'd played him a couple songs, and he was just kind of like, oh, that's nice. And I played him People Like Me, and he was like, well, damn, boy, that's a real country song right there.
Right.
And that was it for me. I was like, well, shit, if I can write that, then I should be able to write some other pretty good stuff too. And so
right. And just for the record, last time you were on the show, we talked about you playing in the basement with your grandfather and stuff like that.
Yes.
That's a great story in and of itself. But I urge you, if you want to hear about that, listen to the last podcast that came out when I had a discussion with Blind Joe. I guess I got to give a little trigger warning. There's some blind jokes on there, so be offended. Anyways,
People, seriously, people, quit whining. I mean, my gosh, like, really? That's what That's what you're worried about. That's what your life is. You got to worry about one guy insulting another guy. That I don't understand it.
I
hear
that.
About this stuff all the time, Chuck, all the time on you know, whatever you want to call it, mainstream media or stuff like the Daily Wire, about people just being offended over something someone said. And I just think, my gosh, don't you people have jobs, families, lives? Come on.
Yeah, but, you know, you should leverage it against them when they don't, you know, if you go do that rally and everything and they don't put you on TV prominently, you should say to anybody who's on the ground from the TV station, what, is it because I'm blind you don't want to put me on TV?
Yeah,
you'll get right on there.
It's because I'm blind, isn't it? This is just like you sighties. Yeah.
You sighted people. You have a problem. Do that. You'll probably get on four stations that night. It'll help you promote everything.
I probably would. Dude, you know, the sad part of it is you're absolutely right. If I went on all these podcasts and shows and played the victim card and said, oh, I'm blind and it's just such a hard life I lead, people would be like, oh, that poor guy. We should start a GoFundMe for him.
They would. But no, I'm just, look, you know, I'm just messing with you, but that would be funny. I would love to see you do it, though, because it would just be hilarious to me, these people doubling over themselves trying to figure out how to deal with it. You know, so yeah, you might get
time.
You might get time. I will not comply. Go ahead.
Right. time to nut up, America.
Exactly. So last thing is that, you know, still working in Nashville, and a lot of people would think of that as, you know, a very, very country kind of place to be. And it certainly is. But it's also the home of a lot of other types of musicians. And I'm wondering if you're, you know, also taking the time to expose yourself to, you know, there were some great jazz guys there some years ago that, you know, were making a living.
Yeah, man.
You know, and some blues players and stuff. And I know all of that. Yeah, go ahead.
Nashville is just a mecca for music, man. I mean, so... And you're right. You know, country is pretty prominent here, and especially if you play on Broadway like I do. Mm-hmm. But we have everything here: rap, metal, blues, jazz, rock, you name it, and everybody's pretty damn good. You know what I mean? Like you don't. I mean, at the Broadway honky tonks, you find people that are cutting their teeth, and so maybe they're not great, but. There's so many places and so many people, and you know, inevitably though, the sad part of it is, I think, it is an industry here, and it's kind of who you know. It's not, you know, a lot of people think, well, it's based on your talent. I mean, I've seen so many way more talented people than me, you know, especially like instrumentalists, you know, guitarists, fiddle players, drummers, that kind of thing. I mean, they go through them like running water out here, and they're super talented people, but they're never going to get a shot because they don't know the right person, or, you know, they're not willing to do this or that or the other. I mean, it's nuts, but it's great out here. If you can make a living doing it, you know, and unfortunately it's a tough thing to do because it is so saturated with talented people.
Right. So look,
I've been very blessed in that regard I have a good voice. I write good songs and I have the blind thing going for me. It's kind of the only thing that it's really ever worked in my favor as far as a job. Anyways.
Well, no, I understand it. You know, it's funny. I'm almost a little jealous of you. I'll tell you why, because when I used to do that kind of thing, I had trained myself as a kid to sort of mimic, you know, fully sighted people. So
right, yeah.
You stand in a room with me, you don't necessarily know.
Right, yeah.
You know, unless you hand me something to read or something like that, and it's like, yeah, good luck. But, you know, or like if you take me to a restaurant, I can't read the menu or whatever. But
right.
But outside of that, you know, people don't even necessarily, I mimic, like as if I'm sighted all the time. And sometimes, yeah, I feel a little like, yeah, well, if people actually saw it, might be different. But then again, I don't know. It's,
See, Chuck,
it's a mixed
thing. You're the reason people say, oh, you don't look blind.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the idiot who messed it up for everybody, you know.
But that's all right, man.
It's okay. You know what? We all live and learn in the same world anyway, and one way or another, we're all here for a limited time. So why not contribute, the best part that you can to it? And that's what you're doing, Blind Joe. Again, blindjoe.com is a place to go for sure to keep up with what you're doing. And I do say, you know, like I only talked about three songs tonight, I think, or four. Maybe that Blind Joe has put out, but there's more, and there's more coming, right? I mean, you got new stuff that you're working on now, don't you?
Yeah, man, absolutely. I'm always, you know, constantly writing and stuff like that. I've got two new tunes that I'm going to go into the studio here this next week. We're going to cut one is called Hardwood Floor, mm-hmm. and that's a good like a Hank Jr. style honky tonk tune, and then another one called Train, Train, Train. Which comes from I always wanted to write a train song my wife had never heard Folsom Prison Blues before I played it like 10 years ago when we got back together.
Oh, no kidding.
And and she always called it the train song, and so I'd always joked with her, I'm gonna write a song called the train song, so when you say play the train song, I can actually play the train song. And right. I wrote Train, 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 and that was going to be the train song, and now it's Train, Train, Train. So,
right.
But both of those I have acoustic versions of up on my YouTube channel. I've got a playlist on there called Originals, and they're both up there acoustically. So I'm going to get the boys together this coming week and cut those in the studio. And then my plan is to release a physical CD. We'll do a six-pack, call it Six-Pack of Pounders. And probably throw a couple of acoustic or live bonus tracks on the end of that. That way I'll have something to sell on the summer tour. And, of course, we'll have the I Will Not Comply T-shirts in stock and ready when we're on the road as well. So, things are going to be fun this summer. I'm looking forward to getting out there and hanging out with the people and just throwing down, celebrating the freedoms that they're allowing us to have for the time being.
Well, and you know what? I have this feeling again that, quite frankly, all that's falling apart. And I think they're not going to be able to stand up and maintain this nonsense too much longer. It does seem like there's more people questioning it. I'm happy about that.
I'm happy about it, too. And what makes me the happiest, Chuck, is to see the messages and the emails that I've been getting lately from people that say, hey, you know, I was vaccinated and... I see what's going on now, and sometimes they don't even say I was vaccinated. Sometimes they just say, hey man, you know, I really, when the song came out, I really thought you were really being a dick or a jerk, excuse me.
It's okay.
And, and now, you know, I get it. Like I see what they're doing to us, and thank you for shining a light on that. Dude, that's why I wrote the song. And right. That to me is just, that's the best. I don't care about getting paid for the song, anything like that, to hear somebody say, hey, you know what, I heard your song and I didn't agree with it, but I looked into what you said in the song, right. And you know, you're onto something here, man. That's it for me. That is just, I get goosebumps reading that stuff, because the way these guys try to screw us over, man, it's just, it's unbelievable to me. And the way that they're trying to push this agenda in our faces, this tyranny and this Satanism and all this craziness, man, it's nuts. It's like the end times or something. I mean, I hate to go all biblical and crazy like that on in,
right.
I don't necessarily think that that's what's going on, but at the same time, you got to admit that we are in a pretty unprecedented period for sure.
No, you know, I see all that, but I also feel like the tide is turning. And
definitely.
It's good to see that. It's good to see, you know, some people come around. Look, maybe they came around to it later. You know, there were a lot of us questioning this to start with. I mean, and like I said to you the first time, I had a mixed kind of reaction to my compliance at first, you know, where it was like,
right.
You know what? I'll do it because whatever. They already got plenty other things they tell me to do that I already, you know, compromise on. It's a piece of cloth. I don't care. You know, but at the same time, it was like, no, I don't feel as though anything should be forced on anybody. We were designed a certain way. I know that you're probably a bigger believer in the, you know, in the one God kind of idea, but you know, whether you believe that or not, I say that we all have the right to be who we are. And that's just something by virtue of our creation, regardless of who you think the creator was. Even if you can just boil it down to your parents created you, by virtue of the fact that you were created, you know, you're endowed with that natural right to, guess what? As long as you're not harming someone else, you do as you please.
Right. And those rights are in our Constitution. I mean, those are rights that we legally have as American citizens. And a lot of people say, oh, that's not true. Oh, really? Well, why don't you take a look at what's going on in Canada right now or Australia? Because they don't have the rights that we have. They do have a constitution in Canada, but their constitution says that the government can come in and change it whenever they want to fit their agenda. So what's the point of a constitution?
No, exactly right. But I'll tell you, the point of Blind Joe's music is that it is actual music, first of all. Okay? It is something made out of a cookie cutter. And I appreciate it, and I hope you guys too. So, yeah, go ahead. Buy his tunes whichever way you want to. And go over to blindjoe.com. Like he said, if you sign up for the mailing list, you'll get one free tune automatically. And I like the sound of it. Drinking song, why not? Maybe I'll have to figure out a way to get myself one of those and check it out and talk to him about it the next time, because Blind Joe, I want to have you back again and continue to follow what you're doing.
Thanks so much for having me on, man. It's always such a pleasure.
And I appreciate it, man. Whatever show I'm doing, I want this guy on. So that's what we're going to do. Anyway, thanks to Linda West for being on the first hour. And again, Blind Joe, go check him out. And I'm not just supporting him because he's a blind guy. He's an actual very cool musician, and if you couldn't hear that during this interview, I don't know what you were listening to. Anyway, that's it. Have a good night, everybody.
Thanks, guys. God bless you.